This is the Rocky Mountain Review. My name is Maximus Hunter.
And I'm Ren Wadsworth, and we are joined remotely by our reporter.
I'm Coda Babcock with the COVID-19 outbreak update.
And we have a special guest in the studio today, Professor Zach Rogers.
Hey, everybody. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Zach. So we're going to kick it off with local news with Ren.
The city of Loveland has suspended the enforcement of RV rules to allow for better quarantine, according to a press release. City Manager Steve Adams signed an emergency order to allow RVs to be parked on private property to be used as overnight accommodation with the property owner's written consent. This decision will suspend enforcement of municipal provisions regarding recreational vehicles. The decision was largely influenced by individuals and families needing to be quarantined from the rest of their family during the COVID-19 outbreak, such as medical and essential workers. The order allows for use of RVs for accommodation under conditions that prohibit the use of external generators and that prohibit the vehicles from being parked in the public right of way. The order applies to self-propelled vehicles and other wheeled vehicles such as fifth wheel trailers, camper shells, and camp trailers. In other news, biochemists have unveiled a molecular mechanism for motor protein regulation that may offer insight into different brain diseases. Ann Manning from Colorado State University's Source reports that CSU biochemistry research Steve Marcus and his team have been conducting research and published their study in Nature Cell Biology yesterday morning. The research examines dynein, an important class of protein, and how they deliver cellular cargo between various areas of the cell. His team has made a discovery in the understanding of how individual molecules affect dynein functions, as well as debunking previous findings regarding the LIS1 or LIS1 gene and how it affects dynein, suggesting that the LIS1 gene acts as an inhibitor to dynein and not an activator as previously thought. This research aids doctors in understanding LIS1, otherwise known as smooth brain, that is caused by a mutation in LIS1. Those with LIS1 often suffer from seizures, limited motor function, and rarely live past a few years of age. With Marcus and his team's new finding regarding dynein and LIS1, scientists and doctors are closer to understanding the molecular basis of this and other severe brain diseases. And that is all the local news I have for you today.
Thank you so much, Ren. We're going to move on to Coda Babcock with the COVID-19 update.
Thanks, Max. I'm Coda Babcock, and this is the COVID-19 outbreak update for Tuesday, April 28th, 2020. The Center for Disease Control has added 6 new symptoms to a list of COVID-19 symptoms: chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, and a new loss of taste or smell have been added to the list. These symptoms can appear anywhere from 2 days after exposure to virus to 2 weeks after exposure. Old Town Fort Collins is starting to reopen business as the Safer at Home period begins in Larimer County and across the state of Colorado. The new phase will allow shops to begin reopening, many recently beginning curbside pickup as an option. It will also allow about 50% of employees in non-essential businesses to return to work in the coming weeks, with the exception of restaurants and bars. Larimer County's Safer at Home phase was enacted on Sunday, April 26, and has the primary goal of maintaining 60-65% physical distancing, and will be in effect until May 26, but it may be extended depending on the circumstances. The purpose of this new phase is to help reopen the economy without causing a spike in COVID-19 cases or overwhelming medical systems. The measures of Safer at Home are similar to those for the stay-at-home order, as the people are still expected to stay at home whenever possible. Customers and employees are still expected to wear masks in public places, such as busy businesses or busy outdoor areas, for the health and safety of others. Gatherings of 10 or more people are still not allowed, and 6 feet of physical distance is still expected to be maintained. Sick people may not attend work and are expected to self-isolate until 72 hours after their fever goes away without the use of fever-reducing medication. Travel outside of the community is discouraged unless it is for essential activities, and playgrounds are still closed. Susceptible populations are still asked to stay home, except when absolutely necessary, and are offered special hours for grocery shopping. Long-term care facilities intended for aging adults are expected to continue using extreme precautions. On Monday, April 27th, non-essential retail began offering delivery and curbside pickup, and real estate showings were able to resume. Elective medical and dental services were also able to reopen if implementing mandatory practices. This Friday, May 1st, retail and non-essential business will be able to reopen if implementing mandatory practices and if they have completed Larimer County's checklist for reopening. On Monday, May 4th, commercial offices may also reopen if they've implemented mandatory practices and completed the county's checklist for reopening. Guidance for restaurants and bars, as well as places of worship, childcare, schools, and similar businesses will be made separately. The city and county of Denver, as well as some other regions, are not following the safer at home phase and instead have extended their stay-at-home order until May 8th, 2020. Larimer County has 337 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and a death toll of 15. Cases in Larimer County are 59% female and 41% male. The age group with the most confirmed cases is between the ages of 35 to 44, with 20% of all cases. 51% of these cases are in Fort Collins and 35% are in Loveland. The state of Colorado currently has 13,879 cases, with 2,485 people hospitalized across 56 counties with 144 outbreaks. 66,341 people have been tested, and the confirmed death toll from complications of COVID-19 is 706. The United States has over 1 million cases, according to the New York Times, as of April 28th, or 957,875 cases, according to the CDC, as of April 26th, which includes thousands of probable cases and probable deaths. There are 52,188 deaths nationwide, and this figure appears to be rapidly increasing at a rate of more than 2,000 each day. Many are dying without access to testing, which prevents accurate and representative reporting from many counties and states. Information from today's segment was gathered from the Colorado and Larimer County, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, the Center for Disease Control, and the New York Times. For more information on the novel coronavirus and the illness caused by it, visit cdc.gov/coronavirus. That's all for today's COVID-19 outbreak update. I'm Coda Babcock, and you're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review on KCSU Fort Collins 90.5 FM.
Thank you so much, Coda. It's so interesting that we are reopening partially the city, and at the same time, you're also talking about how we have now crossed 1 million infections countrywide.
Yeah, a good amount of them are in the northeast region of the U.S., specifically in New York. So Colorado hasn't been as deeply impacted, but we do still have to worry a lot about a second wave.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Coda. We are going to take a quick break, but if you missed any of that, you can find it on our website, kcsufm.com. You're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review here on 90.5 KCSU, Fort Collins. And we're back on the Rocky Mountain Review. My name is Maximus Hunter.
And I'm Ren Wadsworth, and you just heard from our wonderful reporter, Coda Babcock, about the COVID-19 outbreak.
Yes, and we are lucky enough to be joined in studio by Professor Zach Rogers, who teaches supply chain management. Hi, Zach.
Hi, it's good to be with you this afternoon.
So I'm curious, and I'm just going to cut straight to the chase here because you're the one who could tell me, and this is a big question. Do you think the United States has a supply chain in place that can withstand COVID-19?
Okay, so there's a lot of different answers to that question, and really it depends on what we're talking about. So far we've been fortunate in that the things that we need day to day are largely domestically produced. Here's what I mean by that. So toilet paper, food, water, all the kind of things that, you know, when the quarantine started, everyone kind of rushed out to go grab. For the most part, all of that is produced in the United States. And so that supply chain is fairly secure. Now, we're running into issues with some pieces of the food supply chain. And that's mostly because we're missing the processing step. So there's still, you know, plenty of demand at grocery stores. And we still are growing a lot of berries, producing a lot of dairy, raising cattle, all of that kind of stuff. The problem is like what you see at the JBS plant in Greeley, where they had to close down for 2 weeks. And there's meat plants closing down all over the country. And so we're missing that step between raw materials and consumption. And so because of that, we actually see some companies destroying raw materials. For example, Delmarva, which is a chicken processing plant on the East Coast, they announced today they had to euthanize 2 million chickens. Now, that sounds crazy, right? Wow. Because we have a lot of hungry people. We had 26 million people just lose their jobs. What are we doing, you know, euthanizing chickens or dumping out milk or any of this stuff? Well, the problem is, meat processing plants are designed to have chickens of a certain size. And if the chickens, you know, eventually they get too big and you can't do anything with it. It's the same thing we saw when, you know, oil went down to -$40 a barrel in future trading last week, it's because there's no processing capacity. You know, so we process all this oil and then we need to send it somewhere. And because nobody wants it, you know, the plants that process oil aren't designed to hold a bunch of oil in place because it's, you know, they need to go quick. The whole supply chain, and this is true for most industries, is designed for something called swift even flow. And so in swift even flow, the idea is we're basically producing whatever we need right then, and then we're sending it out as quickly as possible because it's cheaper and it's more efficient to not have a ton of extra inventory on hand. So there's some industries that can adjust to that fine. There's other ones that need, you know, a lot of, that are high touch, like meat processing or something like that, that are having real problems pushing everything forward. Now, is there going to be a meat shortage? It seems unlikely right now. There might be a fresh meat shortage, but, you know, we have frozen stuff and, you know, the vegans have been getting by just fine for the last, you know, however many years. So, I mean, you know, we'll be okay. We'll be able to figure it out. Plus, we have a lot less stuff going to, you know, restaurants like that. So, you know, in terms of the basic day-to-day stuff, we'll be okay, but we are having gaps in the supply chain. Now, for things like electronics, apparel, all of that tends to be international supply chains. And international supply chains slowed down about 3 months ago. So anything, you know, basically nothing came out of China in January, February. Things are starting to come now, but now our demand is really low again. And so you're kind of seeing, you know, I mean, we were fortunate in that the things that we needed, you know, right away when the quarantine started, we made here. The things that we're going to want, though, as we get back to normal life, are going to remain international. And those supply chains are going to take a while to get back up to speed. So I don't know if that's really an answer to your question. I mean, because really the answer to your question is, I mean, there's no the supply chain of the United States. I mean, there's a supply chain for a bunch of different industries. And so depending on the industry we're talking about, probably the answer to your question is a little different.
Okay.
Now, one thing I would say is our logistics capacity has been on a roller coaster ride. And so what I mean by that is I'm talking about warehouses and trucks, basically. And so if you look at about a month ago, really maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, when we first went into quarantine, mid-March, we couldn't get enough trucks on the road. And we could not find warehouse space because it was like everyone suddenly rushed out. Remember, you know, seeing all the stories about, oh, there's no toilet paper, there's no eggs, all that kind of stuff. You guys remember that? So basically what was happening is we were trying to push everything forward as fast as possible because we had this huge spike in demand. And so we had this big spike in demand, and that spike lasts about 2 weeks. And then it goes in the tank. And now the transportation market, like, you know, commercial trucking fleets, is totally flat. It's like you let all the air out of the balloon. And it's we're seeing tender rejections and freight prices at levels that we haven't seen since, like, you know, recession times, basically. You know, 10 years ago, we were seeing prices like this. And it's because we've built up this massive logistics infrastructure. You know, like we were saying a minute ago, everything is just-in-time inventory, swift even flow, meaning there's got to be a lot of movement of goods, a lot of really fast, efficient movement of goods. And, you know, we've had this increase in e-commerce and things like that. And so a lot of things that you used to buy at the store now come on a truck to your house, your apartment. So we have this huge infrastructure of trucks and warehouses, and suddenly the trucks don't have anything to move because, one, demand is down because 26 million people have lost their jobs in the last 5 weeks. There's 130 million Americans who work, 26 million of them don't have a job. So that's, you know, whatever that is, 20% out the window in terms of employed Americans, which, by the way, for comparison, we lost 8 million jobs in the recession. So, and this is 26 million, just to give you a sense of the scale. It's a lot more.
Much more, yeah.
And so demand is down. At the same time, just like we mentioned a minute ago, the processing capabilities of many companies are also down. And so there's not as many goods coming out and there's not as much demand for those goods. And so trucks, logistics, that's sort of the link between those. And so if there's less output and there's also less demand, we have way less movement. And so we had this sort of spike for a couple weeks in the supply chain, in the logistics industry, and now that's pretty much gone. The only place where supply chains are really busy is in warehousing, because we have a lot of goods on hand that suddenly we can't do anything to get rid of. You know, we built up, you know, for example, spring apparel. You know, all the spring lines were about to get ready to be sold. Well, now you can't go buy clothes. The lockdown happened the week before St. Patrick's Day and March Madness was supposed to start. We have an incredible glut of frozen chicken wings and draft beer sitting in kegs that's not going to be good for that much longer, that we just never used because nobody was going out for St. Patrick's Day or March Madness or anything like that. And so our warehouses are jammed full of stuff. We're having problems finding warehouse space. And we're also having problems finding things to put on trucks. So if we think about just the physical infrastructure pieces of the logistics industry, it's really a tale of you know, kind of two different stories where trucks are slow, warehouses couldn't be busy.
So what does that kind of surplus do to warehouses and how they're operating?
Well, it's like anything, right? So think about when you have to do the dishes at your house. And I don't know if you guys are like how I was in college, but I didn't always do the dishes at a regular rate when I was in college. And sometimes you get to the point where, you know, have you ever been like, okay, I really need to do the dishes, and your sink is just so full that you're like, I can't even start doing the dishes because there's just they're everywhere. It's the same thing. Yeah, you guys know about that? Or is that just me? Yeah, okay, great.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, I was wondering maybe.
Still.
And so Ren, not you though. You're all good on your dishes. You're keeping it tight.
I live with my parents.
All right. So
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice. All right.
Yeah. During well, the closure, yeah. Anyway.
That's my dishes ever looked too. But that's like how warehouses are. When warehouses get really full, it gets, you know, the supply chain gets slowed down and clogged up. And so right now there's things that we need to legitimately move forward that maybe we don't have the capacity for. And so, like, for instance, with produce, we have a big glut of onions right now. Why is that? Well, you use a lot of onions in restaurants, but I mean, you know, do either of you ever make onion rings at home? Probably not.
Yeah,
I'm
weird.
I mean, God bless you.
Yeah, totally.
But for most people, the produce that you're having at home is like apples, bananas, carrots, oranges, stuff like that. And so there's not, you know, we don't have as much maybe apple storage capacity that we need because we have so many onions just sitting in warehouses. Or we don't have as much, you know, processing capacity for fresh meat because of all the frozen meat that's, you know, whatever it is. You know, I'll tell you one big thing that stopping up. It's like all these places want to start bringing in their summer clothing. You know, it's getting nice outside. People want to buy shorts, but all their spring clothing is still sitting there in the warehouse. So what do you do with that? And I think we're going to see a really interesting next 6 months in terms of how firms get rid of all this excess inventory. Because, you know, kind of the traditional places you would get rid of it, like a salvage dealer or outlet malls or whatever, well, those are all closed too. And so you still have all this buildup, and the sort of drains that you use to get the inventory out of the system are all blocked up as well.
Do you think that might cause those things to really drop in price?
No, it's going to be like spring clothing is going to be unbelievably cheap. Because let's say you're like Macy's or something. Huh. You brought in all your spring stuff. You want to do all of your summer stuff. Okay, but you don't have room to have both. Now you could do something called hoteling. Hoteling is where you just hold it for a year and then, okay, we'll try to sell it next spring. When I worked at Amazon, we used to do this sometimes with Halloween costumes, although very, very rarely. Mostly we would just kind of get rid of them. because it costs money to hold on to stuff. And so I doubt Macy's might be able to do it with a couple things, but they're not going to be able to do it through the whole line. So, okay, what would they normally do in this situation? Well, they would send all the clothes to like a TJ Maxx or a Roth or Burlington or, you know, something like, you know, one of those kind of off-price apparel brands, except TJ Maxx isn't selling anything either. And so, you know, they might be able to do, I mean, if they get the price low enough, they might be able to get some of that pushed down to these sort of off-price value retailers. But the other thing they're going to have to do is just market way, way down on sale. I mean, if you, I don't think kids go to the Gap anymore. So maybe you guys didn't see this, but the Gap right now is like 75% off for a lot of their stuff right now, because the way so many businesses are sort of month to month, and they don't have the capacity to hold all the clothes that they have. I mean, and the Gap, you know, I mean, I don't think they're even paying rent this month. I think they announced. So, I mean, they might be in real trouble, and you know, we're going to see, okay, inventory become very cheap for some things. For other things, it's going to be more expensive. Like now is way more expensive than I had been with meat processing issues. But you're also going to see, I think, a lot of places like maybe the Gap, like maybe GameStop, sort of stores that were on, you know, on the downward slope already. This will be the piece that sort of pushes them over the edge. I think this will speed up. This will act as a catalyst that will speed up the decline. And I'm not saying it's going to be those two stores specifically, but although those two stores definitely have problems, it's going to be the thing that speeds up the demise of a bunch of kind of, I think, retailers that and businesses that were trending downwards.
So you've brought up a little bit about how you think it's going to be affected now, but how else do you think it's going to be affected in the future?
In the future? So, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that are going to change. You know, one of the, you never waste a recession in business. And what that means is, you know, during hard times, you have to figure new stuff out. We have to become more efficient. We have to tighten our belt. We have to do whatever. And then you keep those lessons going forward. Okay. So like, you know, if you look at the rise of things like dollar stores and outlet malls and value retailers over the last 10 years, that's really an outgrowth of the recession when, you know, people had less money and we had to get rid of inventory and, you know, we were shopping at dollar stores more. And a lot of people, you know, they shopped at dollar stores during the recession and they thought, well, this isn't that bad and I can save money and this is fine. And so you've seen, you know, no one company added more store space in the U.S. last year than Dollar General. And that's really a direct outgrowth of the recession. And so if you think about the way businesses work, well, you know, I've had probably 15 or 20 meetings on my computer so far this week, and that's been pretty much fine. There's a lot of folks, I think, who are discovering, oh, you can work from home. And you don't have to maybe rent a 10-story office. I can just rent a 5-story office. And I also think that, you know, there's going to be sort of middlemen retailers that are cut out of the loop a little bit. So take Nike, for example. Nike is still trying to sell shoes, but they can't sell any shoes from Foot Locker or, you know, Dick's Sports or anywhere like that. They have to sell everything directly online. And apparel has been one of the things people have been slowest to move to online just because, oh, you'd want to try the shoes on or whatever. I don't think that's as true for probably your generation as it is for maybe the one above you and the one above that. But now that's how you have to get shoes. And so, you know, you'll see places like, you know, shoe retailers. It's like, well, what's the purpose that you really have? And one of Nike's goals is to get to the point where 50% of their sales are online anyway, because Nike gets more money for every shoe they sell online because they don't have to split the profits with Foot Locker. GameStop, I think, is another example. You know, the video game industry is exploding right now, right? People have to stay home. They're downloading more video games. They're playing more stuff. And so for, you know, Electronic Arts or Sony, it's been a great time. For GameStop, it's been horrible because, people, I think, are starting to realize, well, we don't really need them anymore. Essentially, they're blockbusters, right? I don't know if you guys were old enough to really remember Blockbuster, but you can. Yeah. So back in the olden times, you would get on your horse and you would go down to rent a DVD. And so Blockbuster doesn't exist anymore, because now if you want to watch a movie, you just, you know, it's on your computer, it's on Netflix, it's wherever you want it to be, essentially. Video games are turning into the same thing. And so GameStop announced, actually, you know, after we come back from the quarantine, we're going to come back with 350 less games. And so, you know, I really think, and they were already trending in that direction, but this is really going to be, I think, a sort of a turning point that we look back on and think, oh, wow, it, you know, business and the way we buy things and who got to stay being a business and who didn't get to stay being a business really changed when we had that quarantine. And I think we don't even know what all the changes are going to be yet, because, yeah, I mean, we're coming back a little bit. We're doing the safe at home, you know, or safer at home. But we can't really come back. We can't really turn society back on until we figured out, you know, instantaneous testing. So we have enough tests for everybody, which we're still not even close. And we figure out some sort of vaccine. Until that happens, there's not going to be any like, oh, we're all, you know, back on campus and all going to bars and restaurants and like, you know, I mean, do any of you think it's going to be a good idea to go into like a Broncos game before we know, you know, what tests, before you have tests and a vaccine? Does it seem like a great idea to just you and your 60,000 of your closest friends all packing into a stadium? Does that seem a good idea to any of you guys?
No.
No, and that's why they're doing all the games to no audiences, which should be
really
weird.
Right. So we're not going to be able to come back on, you know, probably for another year, maybe 8 months, who knows. And so we're going to see a ton of change in the way businesses work, in the way the supply chain works, and some of it we probably don't even know about yet. Now, the good thing is, usually you come back stronger and more efficient. It's, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So usually we do come back having learned really good lessons and being much more prepared for the next time something like this might happen.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Zach. We've got one more question for you, and this is just kind of a summary look over everything. What do you think we should look out for the most going forward, i.e. what dangers do we have to be aware of?
So I think, you know, on a macro level, not, this isn't really maybe a supply chain answer. On a macro level, it's you don't want to come back too soon, because then you've wasted the last 7 weeks, basically. On a supply chain level, I think it's, you know, you have to really appreciate, one, the job that the folks working at processing plants and driving trucks and, you know, working in places like Amazon. You know, because, you know, like I said, I used to work in those warehouses, and people are really, you know, it's tough to really avoid people. And so there's people out there who in the supply chain that are kind of unseen. I mean, it's easy to see, you know, what somebody who's interacting directly with people is doing. You know, the people who are still doing takeout at restaurants or working at Target or something like that. It's easy to see that. But there's so many people, you know, back 1 to 2 steps away from the consumer that are essential workers and out there doing, you know, a ton of work to really keep society afloat. And so I think that's, you know, the first thing you would kind of need to take away from this is just the appreciation of the resiliency of supply chains and how quickly so many firms have moved to this sort of new reality. And honestly, it makes me hopeful. To see how quickly, I mean, there's things that we're all taking for granted now that we would have never imagined 2 months ago. You know, I had a Zoom call with my 88-year-old grandmother last week. There's no way that was possibly ever going to happen before she had to figure out how to use it because of, you know, I don't know. So you know, I think there should be hope. I think we should be vigilant and careful because this doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. But the supply chain right now remains pretty strong. Now, things like, you know, the meatpacking plants could drop out, but I think that in general, we're probably going to be okay. It's just, you know, it's a weird time, I guess. And I don't really know, I guess, in terms of, oh, what should we all do or what should we all look for? I mean, you know, if you want to know where the economy is going, I would say look at oil prices and look at tender rejection rates, because that tells you everything you need to know about movement of goods and movement of people. But yeah, I think that, you know, I probably am rambling at this point. Going forward, you know, just be careful, appreciate all the stuff that's going on, and understand that there's really complex processes. You know, understand there's a reason why people are doing things like dumping milk or selling oil for -$40 a barrel and stuff like that. And it's because of the complexity behind all these products.
Well, honestly, we could talk to you all day, Zach. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, I know. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Right on. Well, if you missed any part of that interview, you can find it on our website, kcsufm.com. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be right back. And we're back on the Rocky Mountain Review. My name is Maximus Hunter.
And I'm Ren Wadsworth. And we recently heard from our reporter, Coda Babcock, with the COVID-19 outbreak. And then we heard from Professor Zach Rogers a little bit on supply chain management. And if you missed any of that, you can go ahead and check it out on kcsufm.com, as well as the rest of this episode.
But moving forward, we've got something I like to work on. It's called News Secure the Blues, and just a little something to brighten everyone's day. With the reality of COVID-19, and quarantine keeping Americans stuck indoors, it can be tough to face the day. However, good news still exists, even in times like these. I'm 90.5 KCCU News Director Max Hunter, and this is News to Cure the Blues. Coronavirus is challenging, but our community never fails to come together and chip in to help support our essential workers. Volunteers from all walks of life have gathered at the closed Fort Collins Senior Center to create masks for Northern Colorado. According to Fox 31's Evan Krugel, the center has made more than 2,000 masks and dubbed themselves the nation's first So Safe site. This is because all volunteers must follow social distancing guidelines and take temperature checks before entering. They are welcoming more volunteers, and you can find their website link on our website, kcsufm.com. Bandcamp, a fair trade online music streaming service, is stepping up their efforts to support local artists. Bandcamp allows listeners to buy the songs they stream and choose the price. Typically, Bandcamp then takes 15% of the money, which is already generous compared to services like iTunes and Spotify. But now, to aid artists losing touring revenue during quarantine, Bandcamp has decided to waive that 15% on the first Friday of the next 3 months. Bandcamp has already waived their share of the revenue once on March 20th, and on that day alone, raised $4.3 million. When you're stuck at home, it's incredibly easy to get bored. Thankfully, North 40 News has put together an awesome collection of fun things happening virtually in Northern Colorado this week. The Rock and Roll Playhouse is live streaming a kids show every weekday at 1 p.m. on their Facebook. The members of the group do sing-alongs that are fun for the entire family. On April 29th, Tinmath Beer Works will be holding a music bingo contest. And on May 2nd, Scene Magazine and School of Rock Fort Collins will be holding their weekly NoCo Live from Home show. They play from noon to 8, and you can find more details on their Facebook. This has been News to Cure the Blues. All music in this episode was made by me, and I'm 90.5 KCSU News Director Max Hunter. Let's all try to stay healthy, well-rested, and positive. And that was News to Cure the Blues. We're almost done with our show, but Ren, very important question. What day is it today?
Today?
Yeah.
Today, yeah. Today is National Blueberry Pie Day. Blueberry harvesting starts in early April and lasts all the way until September. Blueberries are also considered one of the healthiest of the berries. According to the national calendar, they are full of antioxidants And this nutrient helps inhibit cancer developments and helps prevent urinary tract disease. Eating blueberries may assist in maintaining healthy blood pressure, reduce blood sugar, and ease symptoms of depression. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Today is also Workers' Memorial Day. This holiday encourages national and international remembrance and action for workers killed, disabled, injured, or made unwell by their work. It is also known as International Workers' Memorial Day or International Commemoration Day, or ICD, for dead and injured, or Day of Mourning. The slogan for the day is Remember the Dead, Fight for the Living. And today is also National Superhero Day. This holiday celebrates both the fictional superheroes in comic books, movies, and television that provide role models for children, and also celebrates superheroes who may not wear capes. The real-life superheroes that may be celebrated today include military personnel, police officers, firefighters, medical workers, and even teachers. And that is all the National Day news I have for you today.
Thanks, Ren.
Of course.
There's something in the air. And you know
what? Yeah, what is it?
I think it might be the weather.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yep. So today was warm and pleasantly windy, with a high of 71 degrees and a consistent breeze. It was a nice day in Fort Collins. On Wednesday, you can expect the temperature to rise and the winds to die down. And on Thursday, you're going to see your high for the week peaking at 84 degrees with substantial cloud coverage so you don't get a sunburn. And that's our show.
Woo!
Yeah, we have a lot of people to thank. I'd like to thank our awesome reporter, Coda Babcock, as well as Brittany Liske, who unfortunately can no longer be with us for the rest of the shows this semester, but is typically with us on Tuesdays. So, thank you.
Oh, we got to thank Zach Rogers. Thank you so much for coming in and doing that interview. It was definitely very informative.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got to thank the people who work with us at 90.5 KCSU. Hannah Copeland, Julia Badalise, Isaiah Reyes, Peter Walk, Monty Daniels, Raven Color, Josh Kellogg, Hunter Sinclair, Asher Korn, Desiree Cruz, Taylor Sandel, Sam Bonifay, Yasmin Conjures, Matt Guzmerati, Griffin Ham, and everyone else. We couldn't do this without you. Thank you.
I got to thank you, Max. It makes me so sad that our time together is growing shorter and shorter as we finish these shows.
Yeah, we only have three more. Well, I'd like to thank you, Ren, for National Superhero Day. You're my superhero today.
Aw, that's so cute. I want to memorialize your work.
Nice. And yeah, we have to thank you for listening. Thank you so much. You know, we're really lucky to have this opportunity to get to talk to you a couple times a week. So thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, it definitely makes everything a little less lonely.
Yeah. And with that, we'll see you next time.